And welcome back to Dad's on the Air, coming to Around Australia on the Community Radio Network. In this program, we bring you informing and entertaining conversations with a wide range of interesting people on topics of fatherhood, family and parenting, and men's and boys' issues. Hi, I'm Bill Cable, and our special guest today is Joe Williams. Joe is a First Nations Aboriginal Australian, a Wiradjuri man, a Koori, a father of five children, a fiancé, a recovering alcoholic and drug addict, a mentor, an activist, a uni student, a mental health and anti-suicide advocate, a left-handed musician, singer, former National Rugby League player, professional boxer, and in 2016 he was the Australia Day Citizen of the Year in Wagga. He's also the author of Defying the Enemy Within, How I Silence the Negative Voices in My Head to Survive and Thrive. Joe, welcome to Dad's on the Air.
There's a fair few labels there, isn't there?
There are. That's an extraordinary label. Well, that was one of the things I wanted to ask you about. I mean, you're still in your 30s and you've had an extraordinary life, haven't you?
I think I've probably lived enough for three people. I've been extremely lucky with a lot of the things I've been able to do in my life and the people I've been directed by. Like I said, I'm extremely grateful to be able to walk this journey and share with people every day.
While all these things have been going on, the title of your book, Defying the Enemy Within, it seems to indicate that something else has been going on in the background as well, though, hasn't it?
A lot's been going on in the background. You know, probably sometimes I'll sit with about four or five different people up inside my head. And, you know, it's that constant chatter and negativity that just sits with me every single day, you know. And it's little things that I implement throughout my life and started as a kid to start to implement these sort of things to help me get through it, you know. It's the constant paranoia and the constant negativity that, you know, I live with on most days. That's just what I do to be able to, I guess, function or make it look like that I'm someone who gets by all right, you know, and some of the things that I've done in my life, that I've been lucky enough to do in my life are fairly extraordinary to the average person. But so it just proves that, you know, what I do works.
Did that just sort of come out of nowhere? Were they sort of like real voices, or how did it first happen?
It was around the time where I was, you know, 13, 14 year old. And what I can trace it back to, and, you know, with a lot of the discussion, I guess, research now around concussions and head trauma, you know, I put it back to the first major concussion that I had in my life that I'm not sure if you've had a concussion personally or for anyone who knows that have had a concussion, know that, you know, when you have a concussion, there's an extreme amount of confusion and doubt, and it's like the dialogue that starts off in your head, you know, questions, what happened, how did it happen, how long will it be like this for, will it ever stop, will I get my memory back, all of those sort of things. So that discussion started around the age of 13, and I guess the difference with my concussion is that the concussion with me, it started to talk to me in a really negative manner and told me that I wasn't good enough and that I'd never amount to anything, and then eventually started planting thoughts and ideas and seeds that I should end my life.
You must have been able to put them in the background because, you know, you were able to do all those things. You know, you played the dream for a lot of us. You played first grade rugby league. You've been a professional boxer. You're on the international speaking tour. I mean, you've done all these incredible things. So were you able to just park them for a while?
No, it was just about self-management at the time. You know, I was lucky enough to play in the NRL, but I played 50 games. Well, I played 50 games in the NRL where I probably should have played a hell of a lot more. If there's ex-coaches or ex-people that are involved in rugby league, they're the first to say that Joe Williams didn't really live up to the potential that he showed in the early days, and it was because of my head. It was because of the stuff that I went through personally, mentally, and emotionally that had an effect so much on me mentally that it started to affect me physically. And, you know, there was days when I physically couldn't get out of bed, or I'd make up excuses not to be at training because everything in my head was telling me that I didn't belong there.
And look, the title of your book is interesting because you say defying. You don't say defeating. You don't say you've been able to get rid of them. It's still something you have to deal with, and people need to realise that
it's
you can't
ongoing,
get rid of it.
Mate. And the thing is that the more people realise and talk to the research of actual mental illness is that mental illnesses are things that you're born with. You know, in a lot of the cases anyway, and especially with my case, is that these illnesses are genetically handed down. Will I defeat it? You know what? I don't know. The thing is that I've had it for as long as I can remember, and I may have it until the day I die. If it's transferred genetically, there's every chance that I'll have it until the day I die. So, you know, it's just about management rather than trying to cure. And that's where a lot of people fall down, is that they park things and things are going fantastic when they're managing it, and they think that they've got rid of it, you know, whether it be depression or any types of other mental health challenges. And they feel that they've defeated it, and then when all of a sudden comes back, it puts them back to square one because they feel that they failed because they haven't now defeated it. It's come back. So what we're going to do is we're going to realise that we can't, we don't need to defeat these things. We just need to manage them on a day-in, day-out basis. And, you know, days are going to be different than the next. And, you know, whatever we wake up at every single morning, we've just got to do the best we can with what we've got that day.
Now, I mentioned that you're a Wiradjuri man, and the interesting thing is that there is a real problem with suicide in young Indigenous men in Australia at the moment, and yet there isn't such a thing as a suicide in Aboriginal culture, is there? Did the old cultural values work to stop suicide, do you think?
I believe so. If there was never suicide around, and now that there's a problem with it, it just tells you you've got to start to have a look at what they were used to, what the old people did, and how they used to do to manage, you know, certain things with well-being in our communities. Because we would have had being positive and negative well-being. It's just that it wouldn't have got to the point where we felt so hopeless that we don't want to be here anymore. You know, our people aren't dying from mental illness as such when it comes to suicide in our communities. Our people are dying from hopelessness. You know, we feel that we can't go on anymore. We feel that our life isn't worth living anymore, and that's a structural problem. That's everyone in Australia's business, is that if you've got people in certain pockets of our communities that feel that they possibly, their life can't improve anymore, then that's not the country we want to live in.
And the tragedy of suicide for our Indigenous youth, it's have you got a feeling for how big the problem is in Australia at the moment?
Of course I do. Every single suicide I hear about, it hits me, not because I know the person, because it takes me exactly back to where I was. And the common theme that we all have, people who go through these tough times, is that not our life circumstances, but the feeling of hopelessness, the feeling that our life can't improve, the feeling that we're better off, everyone else is better off not with us not here anymore. You know, that's a really, really tough place for someone to get to. I've had fantastic memories with my life, with my sporting life, with everything. But the memory that burdens me every single day, that relives in my mind, is the day that I attempted not to be here anymore.
What would you say are some of the main cultural things we can learn from the 65,000 plus years that Aborigines have been in Australia?
A lot of people, and this is what I educate a lot of people on in a lot of communities, and especially the communities that, where I deliver sessions around, you know, Aboriginal specific sessions and to majority Aboriginal audience. There is so much in our stories. We were a people that lived and told and taught our lessons through storytelling. There is so much in our stories that we don't connect to it enough. You know, all of our dreaming stories are essentially what kept us well and safe. There was always stories about not being greedy. There were stories about looking after each other. There were stories about caring for country. There were stories about sharing. There were stories about love for each other. Like, all of these stories aren't just beautiful fables. All of these stories are life lessons to keep us well. So everything you do, and essentially through the five values, that the five core values that I've structured my business around and structured all of my delivery and education sessions around, are essentially the values that our ancestors lived with. So when I'm out in community talking about how to heal each other and how to look after each other when it comes to suicide, essentially it's through Aboriginal culture. So even non-Aboriginal people can learn from those stories and learn the value and lessons that underlie those stories.
Is there one sort of effective treatment that you promote when you have these presentations? Do you say focus on this?
I say focus on each other. The more attention we pay to each other rather than the more attention we pay to ourselves, that's when we're going to help heal each other. You know, like I go around the world telling and explaining the importance of people talking and reaching out, but I know that in those tough times that people don't reach out, I know that it's a really tough place to be able to do that. In our communities, we have to reach out to each other when somebody's doing it tough. Essentially, the main modality of healing is about taking care of each other, paying attention underneath your own roof as to who's not well. Instead of having some judgment, let's start to have some compassion around what's happening in people's lives and start to take care of each other.
And you have a couple of good tips, I think, like, you know, as you just said, then speak up about it, perhaps even write it down and be happy with small improvements in your mental state. That seems to be another key.
Well, the thing is, we don't have to go from 0 to 100 to be an improvement, right? Is that if our well-being is at 27% out of 100, we've only got to get to 28%, and where it's an improvement, right? So the biggest issue is that we have in a lot of our communities is that we try and improve too much too fast, and when we don't, that's when we get down on ourselves. When we get down on ourselves, that's when things compound. When things compound, that's when we fall into a deep and dark depression again. So when we get back to just concentrating one day at a time on improving our well-being, you know what? If I'm at 60% today and I wake up tomorrow at 40%, it's not the end of the world. You know, yeah, we might feel horrible, but we just have to get to 41% for it to be a better day. And we're just going to start to have a look at the tiniest of increments in improving, you know, every single day.
A lot of the things you talk about are common to the non-Indigenous population as well, and you've done presentations in the US. Do you find there are common themes with the non-Indigenous, perhaps the Indigenous Americans and then the other non-Indigenous people?
We're all people at the end of the day. We all hurt, we all love, we all care for each other. We can all be greedy and turn our backs on each other too. Like, when we have, you know, problems in our communities, sometimes they're people problems rather than race relation problems. It's people just being bad people. So when it comes to First Nation people or Indigenous peoples across the world, there is such a commonality with everything that we go through that you know, it's all of the communities or countries that are being colonized that are having massive, massive problems when it comes to oppression of their first people. Now, our people out here, we, you know, might look on the surface that we're struggling with problems in our communities, when it comes to alcohol and substance abuse, when it comes to violence, when it comes to oppression, when it comes to poverty. You know, there's a commonality with colonized countries right around the world with that sort of stuff. And I delivered at the World Indigenous Suicide Prevention Conference. I've delivered at the last two running, actually, and one common conversation that comes out of it is that, you know, our people aren't dying by mental illness, our people are dying by colonisation. We're struggling to walk in the two worlds. So it's about educating First Peoples about being able to walk in two worlds and respecting both views rather than a forced assimilation of one view, and which disregards completely a culture and a way of life.
We're speaking today with Joe Williams, who is the author of Define the Enemy Within, How I Silenced the Negative Voices in My Head to Survive and Thrive. Now, Joe, you've always been one to speak up, and there is a bit of controversy that's been going on for a while now about the Australian national anthem and the inappropriate words there. Is that feeding into the problems for the Indigenous youth, do you think?
It's a minor aspect of many different issues that are happening within community, but will changing the national anthem stop suicide rates? No, it probably won't. Will changing the national anthem improve dramatically our health statistics? No, it won't. But, you know, it's a step in the right direction, I feel. And let's have a look at it from a different perspective as well, is that when we're talking about the national anthem, it was derived from a song that was written during the White Australia policy, where it was legal to steal children. Now, Advance Australia Fair talks about, if people are saying the fairness and equality of the country, what's fair about being able to legally steal children and force them and assimilate them into a way of life? That song was written by a Scotsman, and the song and its original verse in its entirety is about England. If you're a non-Indigenous man in Australia that's born to Australia and have had five generations before you born in Australia, it doesn't mean that your ancestors weren't from the UK. What it means is that song doesn't represent you either. So let's have a look to unite a song, get a song that unites the entire country. Because, you know, as I said, the original verses in its entirety is a song about England.
That's right. And the more you look at the words, bit of a dirgy song, but it's the more you look at the words, the more you think how inappropriate it is, even in the title, you know, Advance Australia Fair, which we're not necessarily fair, we're not certainly
well,
not young and free.
Well, when we have a look at the White Australia policy, when that song was written and composed during the White Australia policy, you know, you've got to question yourself, does it mean fair-skinned people, the advancement of Australia's fair-skinned people? Mm. Because it was a time when dark-skinned people were locked up and killed on sight. So there isn't anything fair about that. You know, whether you want to question it's about fairness and equality, well, there isn't equality in Australia now still, let alone the time that the song was developed and written and brought in as the Australian National Anthem. Let's be honest, the song's only 35 years old. So we're not talking about a song that's steeped in this country's history. We're talking about a song that's been alive for 5 minutes when you're looking at the continual culture and way of life for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people on these lands.
In your own background, you've mentioned your grandfather, Willie, who was a lead guitar and an inspiration to you in other areas. And I think you're a bit of a musician yourself, aren't you, Joe?
I pick on the guitar every now and then. Now, look, music has been something that's extremely healing to me, and I guess you'd look at it in genetics as well. My father's a guitarist, my grandfather was a guitarist, and, you know, those musical genes run through our body, I guess. The thing is that music has got the ability to be the great transporter. You have a look at song and dance when it comes to, even in our history now, I can think about a song and it directly takes me back to where I first heard about that song. You know, I often reminisce on my upbringing and my parents and the gatherings that we used to have. And I think back, when I hear a song on the radio now, I think back to those exact times. So music is a great transporter, and it gives people the ability to be able to be a certain place at a certain time. So that's why I always love music, and it's something that connects with that soul.
Now, you talk in your book about the importance of mentors, and I guess the one that stands out for me is Arthur Beetson. Now, you actually moved into his place and lived with him for a while, didn't you?
Yeah, I lived with Beetson for the first 3 years I was in Sydney. First 2 years, sorry, that I was in Sydney. He was a great man. You know, my dad lived with Arthur when Dad played at Eastern Suburbs as well. So there was that connection, that relationship with our family. And then when Beto eventually signed me to go and play at the Roosters for the lower grades for the Roosters, you know, part of the deal was to move down there, finish school in Sydney and move him with him. So he's a great man and legend, obviously, in rugby league and the history. But, you know, if I had my time again, you know, I would have sat down and learned more about rugby league with Arthur Beetson. But for me, living with him, it was more about Arthur Beetson as a man and Arthur Beetson as, you know, a fatherly figure to me, that someone that I hold close and will do to the day I die.
Yeah, well, a great figure in your life. Joe, we've reached the stage of the show where we ask our guests to pick a song. Would you like to tell us which song you've picked and perhaps why you picked it?
Probably, you know, just going back to the conversation that we just had, you know, and eventually what I was, the song that reminds me of my upbringing is Twist in the Night Away, which is a Sam Cooke tune. So, and Sam Cooke, you know, is one of those guys, and I love that old school rock and roll and soul music, and Sam Cooke is one of those guys that I grew up with and that was always being played at my house, and a fantastic musician through a time of struggle.
Let me tell you about a place somewhere up in New York way, where the people are so gay, twisting the night away. Here they have a lot of fun, putting trouble on the run. Man, you find the old and young, twisting the night away. They're twisting, twisting, everybody's feeling great. They're twisting, twisting, they're twisting the night away. Here's a man in evening clothes, how he got here I don't know, but man, you ought to see him go, twisting the night away. He's dancing with the chicken slacks, she's moving up and back. Oh man, there ain't nothing like twisting the night away. They're twisting, twisting, everybody's feeling great. They're twisting, twisting, they're twisting the night. Let's twist a while. Dancing with the older queen, who's dolled up in her diamond rings and twisting the night away. Man, you ought to see her go, twisting to the rock and roll. Here you find the young and old, twisting the night away. They're twisting, twisting, man, everybody's feeling great. They're twisting, twisting, they're twisting the night. One more time.
And that was Sam Cooke singing Twisting the Night Away, especially chosen for us today by our guest, Joe Williams. Joe, it's been fascinating talking to you, and thank you very much for sharing your fabulous life story with us and giving us some wise advice about some of the problems we're still facing. So thank you very much for being a guest on Dad's on the Air.
You know, just a massive, massive shout-out to all the dads, you know, on the listening channel, but all the men who are struggling that don't have a voice. You know, there's times, situations and issues that we go through as men that you know, a larger part of the community may not understand at times, but, you know, it's a fantastic way to encourage each other that, you know what, no matter how tough the times are, we can always lean on each other to have a conversation. And you know, conversation and storytelling and connecting with each other are the things that heal us in our communities.
Well, look, thank you again for those words, Joe. And don't forget, we'd love to hear from any of our listeners. You can go to our website, dadsontheair.com.au, and send us an email and we'll be in touch. If you'd like to listen to this show again or any of our shows, go to that website, dadsontheair.com.au, or you can follow us on Facebook or Twitter. And we'll be back next week with another show on Dad's on the Air. And we're going to go out today listening to some beautiful music from Gurumul.
Yeah.